his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Tipped away. And Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score!
Jones. Watford for the win.
Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
Welcome back to another episode of Podcast on the Brink. I am your host, Jared Morris. I will be joined today by Alex Bozich, one of the founders and the editor of Inside the Hall. And we're going to break down the latest in IU basketball news, as we always do, and as we are going to be doing regularly for you on Wednesday mornings. I know that our schedule has been a little bit haphazard over these past several months, but we've decided to commit to a schedule of a new episode every Wednesday morning here of Podcast on the Brink. So you can start to count on that and look for it every Wednesday. And as always, Podcast on the Brink is brought to you by The Assembly Call. And if you go to assemblycall.com/subscribe right now, you can join our email list. And we have a number of exciting content ventures planned for the off season. And just as the goal with Inside the Hall is, our goal is to help keep you updated on the latest in IU basketball news. So if you hop on that email list, we will be able to deliver news roundups directly to your inbox. And if you want to stay up to date on the latest conversation going on with IU basketball fans, go to forum.insidethehall.com, which is where the best, most informed conversation among IU fans happens. So with that said, I'll bring in Alex, and let's talk some IU basketball. Alex, you had the opportunity recently to talk with Coach Crean, to hear Coach Crean speak. This is the time of year when the coaches kind of do their annual tour and they go to different cities and, you know, speak to different groups. And it's the first time we've heard from Coach Crean in a while. So if you would just kind of relay how that experience was and if there was anything particularly notable that Coach Crean said.
Well, the event at Huber's is usually the kind of the kickoff, the starting off point for the, I think it used to be called the tailgate tour. Now they're calling it On the Road. Essentially what it is kind of like a tour of the state, essentially, where they go to different sites and they start off in Southern Indiana at Huber Winery. People that are familiar with Southern Indiana know that it's a great place to go and visit, especially this time of year. And I would say close to 500 IU fans were out, so that was always a good turnout there. And Coach Crean was there, Kevin Wilson, Todd Yeagley, the soccer coach, and Terry Moore, and the women's basketball coach, all spoke. But before that, we got a chance to some of the other media there talk to Kevin Wilson. Obviously, we just do basketball on Inside the Hall, so I didn't really kind of listened in there, but didn't really talk to Coach Wilson. But Coach Crean, you know, talked for about 15 to 20 minutes. We had the video on the site. Some pretty good updates there. It touched on, it was the first time he'd really spoken publicly since Yogi Ferrell announced his decision to come back. So he gave some thoughts there and talked about the process for all three guys coming back and doing their research. He also talked a little bit about, you know, the dismissals of Hunter Mosquera Perea and Devin Davis, obviously a difficult situation. And you could kind of tell based on what he said that it was, you know, something that was really difficult for him to go through, obviously, with both of those guys, because you can tell just from his words that he cares very much about both guys. Also talked a little bit about the rules changes forthcoming in college basketball, something that we'll, I believe, get to a little bit later here in the podcast. So overall, it was a pretty good update. The speech, I think, was actually, you know, Coach Crean's really good in that type of setting, talking to assembled fans. He talked, I think it was close to 30 minutes, and the best part, I thought, was when he had Colin Hartman and Ryan Burton up there and kind of fired off some questions, put those guys on the spot talking about their teammates, and that was fun to kind of hear a little behind the scenes things. And I think the funniest part was when Colin Hartman said that Yogi Ferrell currently has a perm, which Coach Crean responded to saying that it would be gone by Tuesday, which I guess today is their first day that they're kind of beginning their phase two. I think they're calling it their off-season plan. So I'm sure everybody's excited to get that underway. But I believe Yogi's perm is probably gone for that.
That's okay. So that's interesting. So he brought them and just started firing off questions. Like, did they know that the questions were coming, or did it look totally impromptu?
Well, he kind of interviewed him a little bit first. There's video of this up on the site too. If you go back and look at the, I think it's probably on the second page now. But you can he brought both guys up and just kind of talked to him, introduced him, you know, had him answer some questions, and then he said, "We're going to kind of go to a rapid fire question and answer session here." And he asked him, you know, who has the messiest locker, who has the, you know, things like that. Who's the worst roommate on the road? I think Ryan Burton said that Robert Johnson was because he has a snoring problem. So that was another funny one was Colin Hartman said that James Blackman is the worst roommate on the road because he randomly starts doing push-ups and stares at you while he's doing them. So that was pretty pretty funny. So it was entertaining. It was nice to. This is actually the first time I think they brought players to this event. The other sports did the same thing. The women's team had Tyra Buss and a couple other girls. There was Nate Sudfeld came for the football team. So I think it was a good kind of changing things up to kind of get the athletes in front of the fans and maybe get to know them a little bit more. Because if there's one thing I think that I consistently hear from fans is that they don't really feel like they know the players outside of kind of what you see in the press conferences. So it was kind of a good to see kind of the other side of that and, you know, in a little bit more laid back, relaxed setting.
Yeah. Any indication on if the players will be brought to some of the other stops along the way?
Well, right now I don't think there's a definitive schedule. Kind of, I know there's another stop in Chicago later in the summer. They usually do something at Lucas Oil in August, and I know they do something in Bloomington in August too. But I think there's still some dates and scheduling to be worked out there. But I would assume that, you know, if the opportunity presents itself, they would do that again. And it seemed like it went pretty well. So moving forward, hopefully that'll become a fixture of the tour.
Yeah. Now, one of the comments that Coach Crean made that you guys put on the site that I found pretty interesting, when he was talking about how their phase two starts soon. And I want to get into it with you, kind of what exactly that phase two is and how the off-season workouts work. But, you know, he said something that was interesting, talking about Yogi being a great example of, you know, it's a real time of personal kind of individual skill development. And he talked about really being concerned about Yogi focusing on being a defensive player. And I think his quote was, you know, "I want him being as concerned about being defensive player of the year and on that all defensive team as anything else." Are you getting the sense that that kind of defense focus is something Crean's really trying to dial in, not just for Yogi, but for everybody? Because clearly we all know that's where the biggest improvement has to come.
Yeah, I mean, he Crean, during his speech, you know, I was live tweeting, obviously, some of the things he was saying, and he made a comment about, you know, obviously we need to get much better on defense, and I had a couple of people respond, you know, on Twitter, the sarcastic people, well, of course they do, you know, the whole tell me something I didn't already know, but, you know, it was something he brought up when he met with us for about 18 minutes, 20 minutes before. You know, it's something he's obviously aware of. I mean, how, you know, he looks at numbers just like we do. You know, he studies the KenPom stuff. He looks at the synergy stats. He knows that defense has got to be an off-season focus for this group. Didn't really go into a lot of detail with him about, you know, kind of what things that need to happen. But just from reading between the lines, I think a lot of it's going to be put on individuals to kind of step up and kind of take some responsibility on their own to become better defensively, because, you know, there's only so much, you know, every guy on the floor has to be accountable for doing their job. And I think a lot of times last year there weren't really many guys you could point to on the roster and say, this guy's a lockdown defender, or, you know, this guy's, you know, somebody you're going to put on the other team's best player. I mean, Yogi was to an extent, but really nobody else on the roster really stood out from that perspective. So obviously it's going to be an off-season focus. Last year at this time we were talking about how they were going to improve the turnovers, and that really improved year over year. So I think there should be some optimism that the defense is going to get better. You had a young team last year. You've got a lot of guys that are coming back with a lot to play for, especially the guys with NBA aspirations. You've got, you know, senior leader in Yogi Ferrell that's coming back to, this is really his last shot to kind of, you know, get farther in the NCAA tournament and kind of build his legacy at IU. So there's I think the summer, a lot of it's going to be used on, you know, they get 8 hours a week, I believe. No more than two can be spent on individual skill instruction, which it seems low to me, but considering before 2012 there was no time that coaches could work with players in the off season directly, this is obviously improvement. So they'll have 8 weeks. They don't have to be used consecutively, where they'll work on things like conditioning, weightlifting, and then obviously up to 2 hours a week and on skill instruction. And I think a lot of that is, you know, especially it helps with the new guys that are coming in, the three freshmen, the walk-on freshmen, and then Max Bielfeldt will, mm-hmm. believe, all be in next week, and they'll get to work with those guys too. So, you know, it's really, if there's one thing I can say about this time, it's that Indiana's not going to waste any of it. I mean, they're going to be productive with these 8 hours a week and maximize the time and try to get the most out of it that they can.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned you were live tweeting with Kareen, and the sarcastic people came out because he mentioned defense. You know, Kareen's kind of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, in that sense, because if he doesn't talk about defense, then people will be like, well, you're not focusing on defense. And then he mentions it and people, you know, will kind of jump on it.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, so there's no, I mean, obviously he knows. And like you said, you know, one reason for optimism is turnovers were the biggest bugaboo 2 years ago. And that really improved. Now, obviously, you know, defense had been good the previous year and fell off, and a lot of that is just different personnel, a different team. But that at least does show that this program does have a history of taking something, making it a point of emphasis, and showing real improvement with it. So if you're
right,
if you're kind of, you know, putting on the ledger pros and cons or reasons to think the defense will get better, reasons it won't, that's one reason to think that it will, as I think, you know, the staff has been able to give us some confidence in that regard. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about this kind of phase two. And, you know, I know you were saying, you know, people kind of wish they could know the players better. You know, one way to get to know the players a little bit, a very little bit, is on social media. And for anybody who follows guys like, you know, Juwan Morgan and OG Anunoby and, you know, Troy Williams on Twitter, you know, you've seen all their tweets about, you know, how they're getting ready to leave home, coming back to Bloomington. So, and you get a real sense of excitement from these guys at getting ready to get down there, get to work. So they have these 8 weeks, and they have 2 hours of individual skill development. You said some strength training. Is there full teamwork that goes into, like, are they putting in any sets or doing any scrimmaging or anything like that, or is it all individual type work?
I believe it's all individual type work. There may be group workouts, but I'm not sure that – I'm not exactly positive what the rule states, but – my understanding is that there may be limited time where they can all get together, but it wouldn't be anything where they're, you know, putting in sets or working too extensively in a team type atmosphere. My understanding would it would be more individual or group kind of type of workouts.
And the and they have this certain amount of time they can work with coaches, but the players can then go to Cook Hall and work out anytime they want, right?
Correct. They can do essentially, you know, they've got the 24/7 access. So if they want to be in there, obviously most of them are taking summer school. I think probably all of them are, but you know, kind of as much as they want to be in Cook Hall, they can be there. So it's that's the other thing. You know, there's only so much the coaching staff can do as far as an individual, you know, making an off season jump. Obviously, they can give you pointers, things to work on, but I bet if you go back and talk to a guy like Victor Oladipo, who really kind of, you know, came to Indiana as a really raw athlete and left as the number two pick in the NBA draft, he would tell you that for all the time that they spent with the coaching staff in the off season, he probably spent three or four times as much on his own working on things. So I think that's really kind of where the accountability has to come in. And I think a guy like Yogi Ferrell can kind of say, you know, this is kind of the expectation. You know, the coaching staff can't tell you have to be here, but, you know, I'm the leader of this team, or, you know, Nick Zeisloff, Max Bielfeldt, you know, guys that have been, obviously Bielfeldt's coming in, but he's an experienced guy that has seen a lot of things at Michigan in his time, but these guys can kind of point to the young guys and say, hey, you know what, this is the summertime, this is when we get better, this is kind of what we're working towards, so we all need to kind of, you know, commit to this if we really want to achieve our goals, and I think this is really the time where players are made.
Yeah, oh, I agree with you. And one guy who seems like he's really using his offseason time wisely has been Troy Williams so far. He seems like a guy who's, you know, he was probably, of the three guys who were considering going pro, it seems like he was the guy that probably would have been drafted the highest, you know, if he had decided to leave. He decides to come back. And we saw a lot of stories come out about the time that he spent with John Lucas down in Texas, both he and Robert Johnson. What kind of sense do you get from that experience, how much it helped him in terms of his individual development?
Well, Troy's worked with John Lucas for a while. His uncle, Boo Williams, has a relationship there. I actually saw Troy at a John Lucas camp when he was in high school. And the one thing I can tell you about John Lucas is, I've been to a couple of his camps for high school kids, and he does not hold back. I guess that's the best way of putting it. He's gonna, this guy, I believe, is the number one pick in the NBA draft. I have to go back and double check that, but I think he was. And now he's really carved out his niche as a guy that trains, professional players. He trains college players. He trains high school guys. So, he's in the gym down there in Texas every day. These guys, made it a priority to go down there and get in work with them. And based on kind of what I've seen from him, they're putting in serious work all day and getting better. So, I think Yogi Ferrell also went down to Texas. I'm not exactly sure what he was doing down there. I believe it's something that kind of a trip that he takes every year to train with somebody down there. It wasn't Lucas, though. So each of these guys, I think they all realize that there's expectations that they really want to live up to this year. And as I said, there's team goals and there's individual goals. And if you kind of look up and down this roster, you mentioned Troy as kind of being the guy that would have probably went highest had he declared for the draft. But, James Blackman obviously has aspirations to play in the NBA. Yogi Ferrell, this is his last year. He obviously wants to play professionally. Robert Johnson's another guy that probably wants to play professionally one day. Colin Hartman's a guy that kind of came out of nowhere last year, and you got to assume a lot of that was done. A lot of that was achieved based on his work in the offseason. So I think the culture, obviously I'm not going to say it's the same as it was when Oladipo and Zeller were there as far as the work ethic, because I can't speak to that because I'm not there every day seeing what's going on. But it seems like things are heading in that direction as far as these guys wanting to spend that extra time to achieve their goals.
Do you think that, and I don't know, I mean, I think the answer to this is pretty clear, but I want to get your thoughts on it, that this is the biggest challenge of Crean's tenure at Indiana? I mean, the challenge he was presented with the first few years is a totally different challenge, but just when you look at, if you compare this team to the 2013 team, the expectations are similar. Now, this team isn't, preseason number one like that one is, but they're being talked about as a top Big Ten team. IU fans' expectations are a deep NCAA tournament run, an elite team. But, with that team in 2013, it certainly, the preceding years suggested that there was a little bit maybe stronger of an internal core. And while Watford tested the waters the year before, and you knew Zeller was a guy who could kind of go pro when he wanted to, it was just those two guys. Victor exploded during the season as an NBA guy. Whereas this year now, Tom has to deal both with the expectations, losing a little bit of depth with Devin and Hunter, but then also three guys that clearly are thinking about the NBA, and so kind of balancing the team and individual. Like, do you think that kind of sets this up to really be the biggest challenge that Tom has had?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he's also trying to kind of set the tone there too, but based on, if you go back and listen to what he said the other night when he was talking to us, he talked about all three of those guys weighing their options and doing the research, but he said the last thing he kind of said was, for those guys to get where they want to go, they need to win, and they need to win big. And I think that's really what where those guys need to buy in. You can look at all these different mock drafts, you can look at what people were tweeting about different guys, but ultimately, if these guys come together, as one and are able to, win a Big Ten, or obviously it's going to be tough to do that with how big good the league is, but have a really good finish in the Big Ten and kind of go farther in the tournament than they've been able to, I think that's something that's going to really help their stock, because as much as the NBA looks at an individual on potential, they also kind of want to see what you've been able to accomplish. And for a guy like Troy Williams, as much as they love the athleticism, it would be nice for him to be able to say, his first year I didn't make the tournament, second year I made the tournament, and then the third year I got a lot better, and we also went to the Elite Eight or the Final Four. I think that's a better thing on your resume than, you know, maybe averaging, you know, 15, 20 points a game and losing in the first round. If you can say, hey, I did this, and I also helped lead my team to the tournament. So I think that's the challenge of kind of what he's got to get these guys to buy in. I mean, you've also got Thomas Bryant, who's coming in, who a lot of people that cover the draft and talk, you know, looking at these guys are saying, you know, he's a guy that's going to come in and NBA eyes are going to be on him immediately because he's a McDonald's All-American and he's a big man. So he's another guy I think that is going to have, you know, options potentially after a year or two. So there's a lot of talent here. Getting it to mesh together and getting everyone to kind of buy into the same goal is the challenge here. And as much as Indiana fans may hate this comparison or kind of hate, you know, even bringing it up, but if you look at what Kentucky's done, especially last season with all the guys they had, all the guys kind of put themselves as far as obviously Indiana doesn't have the number of players or the amount of talent as that team did. But if you kind of look at those guys, how they played all season, they kind of put their individual goals on the back burner for kind of the team goal. And they, you know, almost had an undefeated season. So obviously Indiana fans don't want to model their program after Kentucky, but I think there's a good lesson to be learned there that you can obviously, you know, build something off of the team concept, and then when you achieve your goals there, then the individual is also going to benefit from it.
I love how self-conscious you were prefacing that comparison by twice saying.
Looking back on that, as much as, you know, every college basketball fan that's not a Kentucky fan loves to hate Kentucky, but if you look at kind of what they were able to do, it was pretty remarkable just based on the number of players they had. And you know, they're going to have six, seven guys picked in the draft, and mm-hmm. you know, they got those guys to kind of buy into the team thing, and they almost pulled off something that was unbelievable. So
yeah, plus it's created this beautiful defensiveness that John Calipari seems to be carrying around into interviews, which kind
of that Dan Patrick's like one of the nicest guys it seems like in the world, and he's been after Dan Patrick, so that was good.
I know. Hey, let me ask you this, and this is total speculation, but I hadn't really thought about it before. Because you mentioned, you know, that quote from Tom Crean about how these guys need to win big. Think back to 2013, and let's say that Victor Oladipo's stats, everything is exactly the same. But a few shots, you know, that went in by his teammates, roll out, whatever, and we finish fourth or fifth in the Big Ten, maybe lose in the first round of the tournament. Is he still the number two pick, or was it that team success, and he seemed to be such the driver for it, which obviously we know that he was. But even if everything else was equal and we're not as successful as a team, is he the number two pick, you think?
I don't think so, because if you kind of look at some of the moments that season that really kind of threw him up the charts, I mean, going back to that Michigan State game where he made a couple of great plays down the stretch, the game up in Michigan State that they won that kind of really helped them win the Big Ten. He made so many big plays that helped the team win. I think if he doesn't make those plays and Indiana's not in the same position from a team standpoint, I mean, there's an argument to make. I mean, I think he's still a lottery pick, but he might not be the number two pick just because, you know, he wouldn't have had kind of on his resume that he, you know, led Indiana to a number one seed and a Big Ten title. So,
yeah.
I think there's definitely lessons, kind of things that Crean can point to and show these guys throughout recent years in college basketball. Shabazz Napier is another one. You know, he leads UConn. No one was talking about him about being a first round pick before the season started a couple of years ago. He leads UConn to a national championship. He's got LeBron James tweeting that he wants him to come to the Heat. The Heat pick him in the first round. I mean, none of that happens if UConn doesn't do what they do in the tournament. So, you know, I think there's a strong argument to be made that if you do the things that it takes for the team to win, then all the individuals are going to benefit as a result.
And ironically, Matthew Dellavedova ended up being a better teammate option for LeBron than Shabazz Napier. Who would have thought?
There you go.
So, okay, let's wrap up here by kind of going quick hit with some of the rule changes, because that was big news, came out early this week about the rule changes that the NCAA approved. And the big ones, there's a lot of them, but the big ones are the 30-second shot clock, the 4-foot arc for the charge circle, the reduction in timeouts, and also that they're allowing pregame dunking. Let's kind of take these one by one real quick. The 30-second shot clock, and Alex McCarthy actually wrote a good article about this too, kind of breaking these down. And I thought he made a good point about the 30-second shot clock, which you know, offensively for Indiana, for the most part, Indiana plays faster than that anyway. So, you know, losing those extra 5 seconds, not a big deal. But for a team that really needs to get better defensively and that has fundamental defensive awareness issues that one offseason probably is not going to fix, it seems like reducing the amount of time that the team has to be engaged in defense for individual, at a time, could really help this team. Because we saw last year, it seemed like the team could play pretty good defense for 10, 15 seconds, and then either we'd switch defenses or someone would get lost or there'd be some breakdown that patient offensive teams were able to exploit. And that seems like it should help, you know, buoy any improvement Indiana can make on defense. This seems like it could kind of multiply it a little bit, if anything. What do you think about the impact of the 30-second shot clock?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think you're going to see a lot of – Indiana might be a team that does this too. I think you're going to see a lot of teams that'll try to press a little bit and then fall back to a zone defense just because the thinking is the zone may be a little bit more difficult to kind of attack and formulate a plan. And, you know, obviously switching defenses didn't work out too well, but take away 5 seconds, create a little bit more pressure, and then you're maybe forcing the offensive team into a lesser shot than they would have got with 35 seconds. I agree that there's going to be some benefits for it, but ultimately there was – I agree with you with the awareness from the awareness standpoint. There's just got to be an individual accountability to, you know, stop basic things like, you know, dribble penetration and, you know, kind of simple as kind of seeing your man in the ball. There were so many times last year that there was, you know, Ryan broke this stuff down great, I thought, all season on film session. It was just like basic stuff that's fundamental. And I don't know if it was just guys not being focused on it or if – you know, I don't know if it wasn't emphasized as much as it should have been maybe in the off season, but there's going to be, I think, benefits for Indiana just because I think they're going to be better. They're going to be one of the teams that's best equipped to handle things offensively, and then if they can use it to their advantage defensively, I think it's got to be looked at as a net positive.
Now, the impact of the reduction of timeouts could be kind of interesting because a lot of times people would criticize Crean for not using timeouts. Now that there are fewer of them, when he does use them, he'll probably get criticized for using them too quickly. Do you see any impact on the reduction in timeouts at all?
I don't know. I think the main thing with that rule change is just kind of the pace of play being sped up. The one thing I like about it is if a team takes a timeout, I think it's like within 30 seconds of the media timeout, then it becomes the media timeout. Because a lot of times you'd see like midway through the second half, Indiana starting to open up the lead on a team, maybe, and a team calls a timeout with say 12:20 left, and then so we have this 2 or 3 minute break, and we're all sitting there, and then they get back and run a couple plays, and then it's like 11:50, and someone's fouled again, so we have another timeout. Well, that's going to be gone now, so I think that's. Mm-hmm. That's going to change things for a little bit for the coaches on kind of when they use their timeouts and how they use them. And I think that's going to be just to make the whole, you know, keeping the thing moving. I think it's going to be a big plus in that area. I'm not sure that it'll change a lot for Indiana just because Crean doesn't seem to be a guy that uses a lot of timeouts to begin with anyway. I mean, there was a lot of games last year and previous years where he finished games with timeouts still in his pocket. So,
yeah, and you wonder, I mean, and that may affect a team like Ohio State more, that it has a really young team trying to fit pieces together, whereas Crean's got a 4-year point guard that you know, can help him out there on the floor. And real quick on the 4-foot arc, I mean, this and this basically extends out where a player needs to be able to take a charge. This seems like it could have really affected Indiana if Hunter was still around, because we know how much he wanted to take charges last year. And so, you know, him adjusting to that could have been a big thing. But do you see any other big impact of this new rule change?
I like that. I like this change as well, just because I think it kind of, I don't want to say gets rid of, but, you know, it makes it more difficult for guys to just kind of camp out around the basket and try to take charges. I mean, I think there's so much confusion anyway in the game right now as to what is a charge and what isn't. I mean, there's and so much inconsistency. I think kind of eliminating the whole, making the area even, a bigger area where you have to stay out of to avoid that kind of thing kind of is an advantage to the offensive player. And with Indiana's offense and the guys that they have that can finish around the rim, I think it's obviously something that can work in their favor.
Yeah, and then I believe the other rule change of note was that dunking will be allowed in pregame, which for a team that has Troy Williams, all fans should be cheering. Hopefully Troy just doesn't exert himself too much in the pregame.
Maybe Indiana can kind of, I guess, publicize that a little bit and try to get people to show up a little bit earlier to the games. I know that was kind of a problem a lot last year with the student section not showing up on time, but maybe if Troy's throwing down a couple 360s, we can count on people showing up a little bit earlier.
Yeah. No, Alex McCarthy mentioned that in his article too. And hey, if he's throwing down 360s, maybe we can get Mark Cuban's new technology to give everybody some nice 360 degree angles of it. So
there you go.
Something to look forward to for next year. Well, Alex, thank you. You and I will chat again next week to deliver a new episode. And, if you guys listening, if you have any questions, topics you want us to cover on these episodes, obviously there's plenty to cover. It's Indiana basketball. We could do an episode a day in the offseason and probably not run out of topics. But shoot us a tweet at Inside the Hall, at Assembly Call. Let us know if there's any topics that you want. We'll make note of them and try and get to them. But with that said, we appreciate you all listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink, and we will talk to you next Wednesday on a brand new episode.